Welcome to What's That About? Today, we're talking about what makes a hit song. Now, Don, we have a little bit of a surprise today.
Mm-hmm.
We actually are sitting on a hit song that we wrote ourselves about 20 years ago.
Yeah, late 90s. Yep. I think we were bored at home.
Yep.
Surprisingly, didn't have anything to do on that Saturday night. And I don't know why.
I think we got asked on a lot of dates on that night, and we just said, no, we need to follow where the music leads us.
Absolutely. It's the journey. I was like, I need to follow the musical journey. So we said no to the dates.
Yeah.
And decided to spend it in my bedroom recording a hit song.
And we will shoehorn it into this episode at some point in a worldwide exclusive of a little song that we called Hey.
Yes.
It's as bad as it sounds.
It is as bad as it sounds. I was playing it to my partner last night and she just turned to me and said, this is really bad, turn it off.
It's only like a minute and a half as well. She couldn't even last a minute and a half.
Neither could you on your wedding night. Ew.
So stay tuned for the worldwide exclusive of Hey. We'll see you on the other side of the theme song. All right, welcome to another What's That About? Don, I have had a lot of people checking in with me, worried about you.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, I'm worried about your testicle.
Yeah.
Can you let our listeners know how you're going? This is just a welfare check.
The little guy's doing well. no, he's full recovery. Back to his best, actually. In fact, he's a little bit better than he was beforehand, which is so an improvement, which is good. The funny thing is, I know people, like friends of mine, that listen to it, and no one has mentioned it. I think they feel bad for me. And then once, because my son likes to listen to it, and I left him in the room, and he's like, Dad, can I listen to the new episode? And I'm like, yeah, okay. So I put it on, knowing, like, all right, this will be interesting. And when I came back, he just looked at me disappointingly and said, why'd you mention it, Dad? Why did you do that?
Outstanding.
Yep. And so... But no, he is doing well. Thanks for your concern. Okay. It's all sorted.
Great. That is great to hear.
Yep.
I guess before we get into the episode, bit of housekeeping. Mm. Firstly, we have released since last episode our biggest tolerator quiz.
Yep.
We've had a bunch of responses come in and some very strong efforts, some really good efforts.
But plenty of room for getting in and winning that mug.
So if you want to win the mug, We'll post it again. Check out the socials.
Yep.
Fill out the survey for your chance to win a mug. And on that note, Brian Tripp.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Trippy.
He has received his mug.
He has. And I'm very angry at the Postal Service for taking 2 years to send it.
You sent that ages ago.
Ages. And it just took so long. I'm so annoyed at UPS. Is that what the American one is? Yeah, UPS?
The other bit of it that was quite interesting was Brian... Talk about an exaggerator.
Yeah.
He actually wrote in the comment when he sent it, thanks for the mug. Great to receive it after 2 years.
Yeah. Which I thought was rude. So I went and I fact checked him.
How long was it?
1 year and 11 months.
What a drama queen.
Come on, Trippy. He's just much ado about nothing. Once again, classic Trippy though.
Brian, hyperbolic Tripp.
Yeah.
Calm the farm, Trippy. You've got your mug in a speedy time.
Yeah. We finally did it. And well done to Trippy for winning the magpie winning competition from episode 2, I think it was. We're up to 97 now.
What a legend.
Yeah. Nah, but absolute legend. And he has put in a quiz.
Oh, nice.
Result and a very strong showing as well. So
good.
Get in there and beat Trippy. Not need two mugs.
Imagine if Trippy got two mugs.
Ah, too much.
Two mugs, Trippy.
Yeah.
Oh, on that note, like one of the main bits of feedback we've received since we started is we need to release episodes more regularly. And I've always argued, once you had too much of us, you'd realize we're a one-trick pony.
Absolutely.
We need to space it out so you forget that we've only got one trick.
Yeah.
But anyway, I've decided, Don, that we're going to release monthly episodes. And we're going to release them on the first of the month.
Yep. So the first of every month, it's What's That About Day.
And so pinching the punch for the first day of the month and a What's That About episode, just to kind of get ourselves back into a bit of a rhythm and be a little bit predictable. Once a month to record effectively a 45-minute chat with no research beforehand.
Absolutely.
Should be very achievable. We've never been able to do it before.
No. We've had a lot of feedback regarding this, and then we both sat down with a buddy of mine, Eden. Shout out to Eden, who's been on my back about release schedule for years.
Mm.
Now, we settled on once a month, and he gave me a very disappointed look. I think he was expecting, like, weekly.
At least twice a week, I think he was pushing for.
Yeah.
Not going to happen, Staffy.
No, once a month, that's all you're going to get.
Yeah. We were out for a beer in the feed with Eden, and we agreed, compromised between the three of us, so once a month. You and I actually, I think, shook hands.
Yeah, we did.
On a commitment to once a month.
A contract on a napkin. It's now framed.
It's framed. It'll be worth a lot of money one day.
Absolutely. It's
once a month, it's on. Okay, but the standard question, Don, what's been happening in your neck of the woods this week?
Nothing much. Surprise, surprise. However, one little amusing thing did happen recently is that I was just sitting on the couch with my partner and we're just watching, I don't know, some show where they were rating people's looks.
Hmm.
And then she looked at me and she goes, what do you rate yourself? And I thought, all right, this sounds like a trick question, but I'll just go into it.
Out of 10 or?
Out of 10.
Yeah, okay.
And so, you know when you're rating yourself out of 10, which I know you do regularly, you think about what you actually are.
Yeah.
And then you knock it down a couple of pegs. So, just to be, you know, not to be arrogant. So I go, oh, look, I'm probably a 4 or 5 out of 10.
Hmm.
And she looks at me and goes, you're not a 4. I'm like, you just called me a 5 out of 10. I couldn't believe it. I'm at least a 6, everybody. At least a 6. I couldn't believe it.
You're not a 4.
No, you're not a 4.
That is good.
Yeah.
It'd be great to be a 5.
I would kill to be a 5 in reality. Yeah.
That's the dream. Oh, a 5.
So good. Imagine that.
I had on in my week, I reckon, one of the worst first impressions I've ever made on anyone, which is saying something for me because I can really say some stupid things very early on in meeting someone. This one, so at work, new team, playing a bit of a get-to-know-you game, and I was paired up with my new manager, day one of working with this new manager.
Yep.
The get-to-know-you form had a bunch of questions that you had to ask each other. So we pair off. First question, do you have a middle name? I say, yes, but it's absolutely terrible. So then she said, what is it? And I said, Francis. And then she said, that's my middle name. So then I tried to save it by saying, oh, now I think it's great for a girl, but it's not a great name for a boy.
Mm.
Making me sound like I'm some gender stereotype 1980s dinosaur.
Thanks, Piers Morgan.
Just digging that hole deeper. Because growing up in the 80s, with the middle name Francis as a boy, when the relief teacher would come in and say everyone's middle name in the role, everyone would laugh at me for having that name.
I remember everyone would laugh at a middle name. Even if it wasn't funny. My middle name's Thomas. And everyone's like, and it's so like, true. It's just a normal name.
It's like the middle name's John.
Oh, mate, you're kidding yourself. Yeah. How embarrassing, mate.
John.
Yeah, what is that? But I had a friend with a middle name. And you know when, like, every now and again you'll get, like, a gift on a silver platter? I think the teacher was going through the names and he goes, Peter Palfreyman. And I was like, did you say Palfreyman? It was so good.
What a treat.
Yeah,
such a treat.
Yeah. It was a great day. Anyway, awesome. One of my best.
Alrighty. So the last item on the homework is the room of the review. And this is the one that we received a little while ago now. I think we got it when we had that really big haul of reviews that we've been living off for the last 6 months.
Absolutely.
And I think this is probably the best written review we've ever received.
I love it. I think it's hilarious. We alluded to it in a couple of episodes ago, but it is fantastic.
It is great. Let's open the room and get Mum to read it out.
Thanks, Luke and Don. Just one review this week. I love WTA. 7 exclamation marks, 5 stars, by Outrovert from the United States of America. If WTA has 1 million fans, I'm one of them. If WTA has 1 fan, I am that one. If WTA has no fans, then I am deceased with a capital D. I don't know how I stumbled upon this podcast, but I'm forever grateful I did, because it has graced my life, enlightened me even. I am a changed woman. I have seen the light, and it's What's That About? This seriously is my most favourite podcast. No other podcast makes me laugh as much as this one. No other podcast asks the questions I'm dying to know. I really do want to know What's That About? I live for Don's definitions because I am, in fact, ineloquent. Social Etiquette's Guide turns me into a socially aware woman. When I listen to it, it feels like I'm eavesdropping into a conversation with Luke and Don, where neither of them can stick to one train of thought, and I am here for it. I wait with bated breath for new episodes, much like a woman in the 1800s waiting for the next letter from her husband who is away at war. Wow, what a great review. If that person was on the podcast, I might even listen occasionally. No offense, Luke and Don. Love you.
How good was that?
That was a journey and a wonderful journey.
It's great. It was all good. It was all 11 out of 10. And yep. Then that last line about the woman in the 1800s looking forward to the letter like it from a loved one from afar in the war, that took it to the stratosphere.
It was the best. That is officially my favorite review. And I have to throw a challenge out there. Can you beat that review? It is hilarious.
So good. Thank you very much. Was it Outrovert? What a great name as well. Outrovert. Yep, that's
absolutely
good.
Absolutely.
I just have a really, really quick mini What's That About that I haven't even mentioned to you.
Yep.
This is not the topic for today.
Okay.
And I want to spend 2 seconds on this because I know it's not. Mm-hmm. I can't find the answer to this. So I'm actually doing a call out to the listeners. Help me answer this What's That About. So in a nutshell, do you remember growing up in the 80s and 90s when you would open your freezer and then you'd close it again and it would suction shut?
Yes.
And you couldn't open it for at least 10 seconds.
Yep.
Good times.
Yes. It's good unless you really wanted that zooper duper.
And I had a quick look online about why does that happen. And it was something to do with when you open the freezer, the cold air spills out and the warm air enters. And then because the cold and warm air have different pressures, when you close it, it creates a vacuum, which means the door gets shut closed very tightly. Mm. And so you break the seal by putting your little finger in the side and opening up the side bit.
That's right.
That breaks the seal, which equalizes the pressure. You lose your suction.
Gotcha.
That's how it used to work in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
I checked with my new fridge, which I bought about 6 months ago. Mm. The freezer does not suction shut.
Okay.
I can open and close it at my whim and whimsy. So they're now designing freezers in a way that they don't suction shut anymore.
Yeah.
But I cannot find out the answer to how they're doing that, or was it a conscious design decision? So my question for the listener is, why do modern freezers not suction shut anymore?
Good question.
I cannot find the answer on the first page of Google anyway.
Now, I do have to wonder, was it just our fridge that suction shut, or was it...
No, I've asked around.
Yeah.
It's a common memory of people in the older fridges. Yeah, older freezers do not open easily once you've closed them.
I'm tempted to recheck my fridge right now. This is one of our rare What's That Abouts where we're in the same room.
That's true.
Should I just
run over
pop into the kitchen? Okay,
yeah, run over and do it. While you're running to the freezer, I'll just fill some dead space. Yeah. That moment when you've opened the freezer, you've grabbed a Zupa Duper, and you pull it out and you realize, oh, hang on, I've grabbed the wrong flavor. And then just as you're about to close the freezer, you realize, oh no, I'm actually going to have to go through this whole waiting it out process. And at the last minute, you try to stop yourself from closing it, but it's too late. And you've just got to patiently wait the 10 or 15 seconds to get the freezer open again. Tough. That was a long wait. Very long wait. All right. Don's back. All right, Don. What was the verdict? When did you buy this fridge freezer?
Hang on. I just got to finish my Zupa Duper. okay. So, look, to be honest, it's an older fridge. So, this throws a curveball.
How old?
I'm going to say it's about 15 years old. No suction.
No it suction 15 years ago?
Perfectly. Yeah. Yep. So,
that's interesting.
Look, I don't make of that what you will. I don't know. I don't know how to analyze that.
It's neither here nor there.
Yeah, hang on, let me just double check. Hang on.
Oh, he's gone double. No. This is how thorough the research is on this show. He's going to go open the freezer again.
Our fridge is
20
years old?
Okay.
Okay.
20
years old.
Okay, so this is almost 20 years old. This is before the point that I think they would have changed it.
Yeah, that fridge is rubbish then. I need to get a new fridge.
Hang on a minute. So you're saying yours doesn't suction?
Doesn't suction.
And it's 20 years old?
Yeah.
Oh, this is interesting. This is too big for us. Let's hand it over to the people.
Hang on. I'm trying to go to NASA.com. I'm going to contact these guys because they need to get onto it. This is well beyond our capabilities.
All right. So if you do know the answer to this, if you can sort us out, please write in. What's the email address again?
What's that about? @outlook.com.
All righty. Thank you. All right, Don. So after another incredibly long run-up.
Yeah.
Some of the rules of podcasting are cut to the chase. Don't talk about how your week's been for 20 to 30 minutes before the episode.
Yes.
No, we will. We will talk about
irrelevant things. Speak about your week for 20 minutes. So I just thought I was following orders.
All right, Don, let's open the... before we get to the Don's definition team. Now, this is one of those topics where we were actually batting topics back and forth for a while.
Late news. My partner Leah has thought about it and has messaged me through, knowing she didn't want to interrupt the recording.
This is breaking news. Wow.
20 is too long. Maybe 15.
Okay. Yep.
Look, we're still in the same place.
We're looking at 2008 vintage. So it's old, but it's much newer than the fridge freezer we had as a kid.
That's right. Mm. So we need someone with a 30 to 40-year-old freezer.
Yeah. Hmm. Or someone that knows how modern freezers work.
This is scintillating content.
Hot.
This is
sizzling hot.
It's sizzling hot.
Anyway, so we actually struggled to think of a topic for this episode for ages. And then you and one of our other brothers got in an argument because he has music tastes that are quite mainstream. Mm. And you're a bit of a muso who likes music that's a bit more independent, alternative, left of center. And he cannot fathom why his songs he loves, you think are not good.
Yeah.
And he's trying to figure out what is the difference. He can't hear the difference.
Yeah.
And I think we can come back to that during this episode. But then from that, we came up with the idea of what makes a hit song anyway. So that's where we got to this topic from a little brotherly disagreement. Mm-hmm. What makes a hit song? Don, hit us with here's for the Don's definition.
Hold on to your stovepipes. It's time for Don's definition.
So a hit song, also known as a hit record, a hit single, or just a hit, is a recorded song or instrumental that becomes broadly popular or well-known. Although hit song means any wildly played or big-selling song, the specific term hit record usually refers to a single that has appeared in an official music chart through repeated radio airplay, audience impressions, or significant streaming data and commercial sales.
Yeah.
So it's really a commercially driven thing. A hit song really means you're selling enough to get on the charts.
Yeah. So it's no statement on the quality of it. It just means people have listened to it a lot, either by buying the single or downloading a lot.
Yeah.
And I looked at some metrics around that, and it's almost like if it makes the top 40 on the US Billboard charts, they're calling it a hit.
But I think that's too...
It's very generous, isn't it?
I think it's too generous. Yeah. I think a hit is a top 10 song.
Oh, yeah. I'd almost say it's going to be number one to be a hit.
Nah.
Too ungenerous.
No, I reckon to get a top 10 song, very hard. Now, I looked into sales figures about what it takes to get on the charts.
Mm.
So in the UK, which is a pretty healthy market, guess how many copies of a single you'd need to sell to reach the top 40?
Top 40?
Yeah.
I'm going to say 200,000.
Okay, lower.
100,000?
Lower.
50,000?
Lower.
20,000?
Lower.
10,000?
Lower.
1,000.
Okay, hi, you idiot. Ridiculous.
This is more hot content. Me getting numbers.
Anyway, back to the fridge. No, so it's 6,000 copies could make the top 40, it says.
Wow.
Which is really low, I think.
That's very low.
Now, there is I know it's low enough that if you wanted to manipulate the charts, which has happened, record companies will go out and then buy their own singles just to get on the chart, hoping to gain attention, and then more people will buy it from then.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. But that's a very low. 6,000 is not a lot, I would have thought.
Yeah. Because I looked at in the modern day, like in terms of downloads being how most people listen to music or plays on streaming services, and Spotify quotes the figure of 500,000 listens or downloads is how they define a hit.
Right.
Which is a lot of listens.
Yeah.
Like, that's quite a high bar.
Yep.
In contrasting to that, 6,000.
That's right, yeah. But streaming is different because a lot of the streaming is they're on, the songs will be added to playlists.
Yeah,
and then people,
true.
It's like more of a passive listen, whereas buying a single, you've heard it, you like it, and you're going to the shop to buy it. I think it's a very different thing.
Yeah, fickle. And so in terms of what makes a hit, there's a few different perspectives we could bring to this.
Yeah.
I looked at things from how musicians think about it, to how producers think about it, to how scientists have looked into it.
Yeah.
Where do you want to start?
I think I'll start wherever you want to start.
I'm going to throw the first question back to you, because anytime I looked at how do musicians talk about it, let's put our cards on the table.
Mm.
I know nothing about music.
Mm-hmm.
You know quite a bit about music.
Eh.
Yeah,
a little bit. Not a big deal, guys.
And so tell me at any point where I'm saying ridiculous things.
Yeah.
But everything I read, they said, what makes the number one hit? They had this annoying thing where everyone was saying there are three things. One, melody. Two, melody. Three, melody.
Yeah, that is annoying.
That's very annoying.
Yeah.
But what do they mean
and
by that?
And it's not even true. Yes, melody is extremely important, in my opinion. Ultimately, it's a really hard thing because I think any song that gets the top 40, any song you're likely to hear on radio, generally is a good song. And then going back to like me and my brother Nick's argument, it's very subjective. So what I think is rubbish and what he thinks is rubbish are two very different things. Most of the time, they're still good songs. We just don't like it for some reason.
And so that from that perspective, you can say it's just different tastes.
I think different tastes, yeah.
But can I have a little theory that I looked at when I was thinking of that argument, when I was looking into this. So the first group, musicians talk about melody being killer. Killer melody is important. The second group was like producers or people that make the craft of music.
Yeah.
And I saw this commonly appearing list coming up. And let me read some of these things to you.
Yeah.
They say these are the elements common to hit songs.
Mm-hmm.
And please interpret this for me like a translator.
Yeah.
First one is often they're a bit shorter than the average song length.
Yep.
So they can be, I guess, consumed and played at higher frequency on radio and they're going to be able to fit into the time slots and whatnot.
Yep.
Second thing, they have a short intro.
Yeah, I've heard that.
So often they say that a hit has about a 7.5 second intro before it gets into it.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike us, we do a 35 minute intro to the podcast.
That explains our downloads. I think that's why no one listens.
Now, this third one is the thing that is a hint that it might explain the argument with you and our brother. They reckon that most hits limit the number of arrangement elements that occur at the same time. So when I listen to your music, which by default has become my music, it's more complicated. There's more going on. There's more layers of sound. Whereas a hit, according to this, uses simple arrangements. So it's probably less interesting to you as a musician.
Yeah.
Whereas to a non-musician, it's probably cleaner.
It appeals more to a broader audience.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's probably true.
Is that a clue?
Yep. Look, ultimately, no one knows. And people have been thinking about this for a long time. An interesting thing, when I was probably 20, I used to work at a place and my bosses...
How general could you be? You used to work at a place.
Well, I don't want to...
You're like you're in the FBI or something.
I'm really trying. It was greeting cards. I don't want to identify anybody. I used to work at a place and the boss's son, it was an entertainment-based place. The boss had a lot of contacts, had a lot of money. And so the son basically was trying to get famous in a band and he was listening to other songs big at the time and taking note and actively trying. His entire goal was to be famous.
So he's trying to mimic what other people are liking.
He's trying to analyze, right, why is that song big? And he was trying to write a song like it. They had money. They were signed to a record deal.
Wow.
They were produced by the guy that produced Guns N' Roses.
What?
And they were absolute rubbish. Their main goal in writing a song was a broad appeal.
Mm.
And I think it didn't have any soul. And they were terrible.
Interesting.
Yeah. They didn't get anywhere.
Yeah, interesting.
Because I think they were just trying too hard to appeal mainstream.
Yeah, yeah.
And they weren't writing songs because that's how they were feeling. They were just like, if I write this word and this melody, maybe that'll cross over to success.
Yeah, that's interesting.
They were garbage.
It's kind of similar to, because I was thinking about this in researching this episode around, you know, the 60s and 70s and 80s was like the musician was into music.
Yeah.
And you have like the Beatles or you have Jimi Hendrix or you have Bruce Springsteen or whatever.
Mm.
They're musicians. And then we hit the 90s. And in the mid to late 90s, when we get the boy band era, where you've got producers who are finding people that can somewhat hold a note.
Yeah.
They look good and they want a marketable product first. And then they try to get people to write songs that are going to be hits. And it's almost like the authenticity of music changed at that point to more what your colleague son was doing.
Yeah.
And less about what music used to be about or what it should be about.
Yeah. But boy bands have, you know, they've been around since, I think the first boy band was the Monkees. Do you remember them?
Yes, that's true.
They were a boy band, basically.
That's
manufactured,
true.
Trying to kind of like go on the back of the Beatles and things. So that's an old technique by record companies to try and sell records.
Yeah,
but you know, the Monkees were pretty successful. But based on what I looked at, I've looked at multiple sources here, and this is what they're basically saying. The song has to be catchy. So that'll be chords and melody. Mm-hmm. Have to have a bit of catch about it.
Yep.
The song has to have interesting lyrics or something that resonates with people. A massive factor is the record label promotion has to, you know, they've got to put money into promoting it.
Yeah.
And otherwise, particularly these days, people aren't, they're just not going to hear it. The amount of good music that isn't being heard is crazy. Or the amount of good bands that have fallen by the wayside, mine, that didn't sell many records at all, look, it's because of the lack of promotion entirely.
And then that opens up that subgenre of what they call a sleeper hit,
where yeah,
it's been
right.
released pretty much like what Oregon Owl song's going to be. It's going to lay there for 20 years.
I don't think so. I think there's
no marketing.
The punters are asking for it. There's a lot of demand out there for hay. Yeah, I think honestly, in terms of making it a hit, I think marketing is the biggest factor.
Mm.
Because and these days with YouTube and just getting onto stations, there's a lot of politics in music that have to do with relationships and money and all these kind of things, which you can have the best song in the world and it's not necessarily going anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to get it into people's ears for it to have a chance.
Yeah.
And so while there's kind of this, you know, one perspective from the musicians and producers is let's try and figure out what are the elements of a hit. And then in the last 10 years or so, there's actually been a lot of researchers and scientists that have actually tried to create regression models and equations that explain hits. So they'll look at like, you know, thousands of data points on previous hits and then try and create statistical models that identify what makes a hit.
Yeah.
And so the big one that I saw referenced a lot online is called the hit potential equation, which some scientists about 10 years ago put together this algorithm that has 26 elements of a song. And they're things like the danceability level of the song, tempo, beat variation, time signature, 26 of these elements. And each of these elements, they give a different weighting in the equation to predict the outcome of a hit. And they run it through these big machine learning models. And they are now claiming that they can predict with 60% accuracy whether a song will land in the top 5 or not make the top 30.
Are they taking into account promotion and all that kind of stuff?
Well, I think they're controlling for all of those things.
Right, yeah.
Stripping the song back to its elements. And maybe the 40% they can't explain is related to things like marketing.
Yeah.
But 60% doesn't, that's like slightly better than chance. Doesn't seem that good.
No, I think that's pretty good. If you can predict a hit. A lot of those kind of things, there's a few around and they're trying to predict hits once it's the song has been made. But I haven't seen anyone using that to then tailor a song to become a hit.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the things at the bottom of one of the articles I read was like someone saying, this research has profound implications for music and the production of music because people can then now intentionally write songs that become hits. And I'm like, I haven't seen it happening.
No, look.
Or would we know, though? Would we know?
Yeah. I just think there's also this X factor. It's got to be the right time. Like certain songs I can link in with something that's happening somewhere else in the world. Like the classic one in the 60s, you know, Are You Going to San Francisco?
Mm.
Massive hit, one hit wonder.
Mm.
I think it's by the Fifth Dimension. Could be making that up. They just kind of linked in with the counterculture hippie movement at the time.
And
there's a lot of songs like that. That just kind of there's stuff happening in the world, or there's time for a change, and they happen to strike at the right moment.
Yes,
that's another factor. There's so many factors.
Yeah,
that it's really hard to do it. And I think if it was that easy to do, people would be doing it regularly, and it's not.
Yeah, absolutely, very very true. Some songs are universal and evergreen.
Absolutely, and Hey is one of them. Hang around, it's coming up soon.
The other research, the scientific perspective on this, and this is a little bit tricky to explain, so I'll try to keep it as simple as possible because I don't understand it, was around this research when they looked at people's reactions to songs, and they said it's these two elements of how surprising the progression of music is and then how pleasant it is. So they said what we like is when music is unpredictable for a while, but then when it has a moment that is predictable, we like it. And likewise, if it's too predictable, we like a moment of surprise. And so once we can, it's almost like we have these expectations while we're listening of what we're going to hear.
That's a good point, I think.
Yeah, and we like it being like predictably surprising. It's probably the way to say it.
Yeah, because some songs can be quite way out there and hard to really get your head around. But then maybe there's a chorus which is a little bit more mainstream or accessible and you grab onto it almost and go, yeah, this is it.
Yeah.
And then vice versa as well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I like it.
And that was probably, you know, the main perspective my research looked at.
Mm.
One thing I did have a little eye for, though, is the one-hit wonder. And what I noticed was there was, you know, people kind of mock one-hit wonders. My view on it, though, is if you've had a hit,
yeah,
even only once, it's like you've climbed Everest, reached the top,
yeah,
and then never gone back to the top.
Yeah.
It's still a great achievement.
Absolutely.
Not to be mocked.
I've been in bands for years.
Yeah.
And took it pretty seriously for a while there. I would have killed for a one hit.
Yeah.
Just absolutely killed.
Just a moment at the top.
Yeah.
It'd be great.
Oh, it would be great. People do look down on one hit wonders, yeah, which I think is ridiculous because
totally,
it's a massive achievement in and of itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
What would you say what's been the pinnacle of your music career in terms of a success point where you're like, little D's doing all right?
Well, the thing I enjoyed the most, or the thing that we toured New Zealand. So I'm basically an international touring museum. An international touring musician.
It's one of those freak show museums, is it?
Yeah. No, but that was really fun. And we played a bunch of gigs, some of them really big gigs in front of people. We supported a few semi-big bands at the time. It didn't really translate into anything, but it was a great way to spend your 20s.
Oh, amazing.
I loved it. Yeah. Amazing. Had a lot of experiences and with some good mates. It was great.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great, though, if you were in one of those freak show museums and the exhibit was, come and see the 4 out of 10.
Yes. The 4 out of 10.
And you were just standing in there wearing a pair of jeans and a faded shirt.
Hey. Hey. How's it going? Yeah.
That would be awesome.
That would be good. Sort of.
Yeah. What's been the highlight of my music career?
Yeah.
I think our single, Hey. That was... I think we're probably at the point where we could play the song.
I think we should play the song. Now, let me just set the scene here. Two very lonely boys. And we, on a Saturday night, we didn't feel good about ourselves. Mum and Dad were in the next room watching The Bill.
The Bill.
And
I think Mum interrupted the song to get to make a cup of tea and some Scotch finger biscuits at one point.
No, I remember, I think it was just like, I think you said, let's write a song.
Why not?
And I was like, yeah, all right, what else are we doing? And then we did it, and I remember like a few weeks later, you're like, let's do it again. And then we did, and unfortunately that one's lost.
My memory is when we did this first one, Hey, we were like, let's actually try to write a song, which our natural inclination would be, let's write a stupid song or a parody, or which is what one of our other songs was.
Yes.
But this one was like, let's try and write a commercial pop song.
Yep.
And I wrote the lyrics, and I wrote them... like almost like a broken heart love song.
Yeah. Well, you were going through a lot at the time. And
I think you were working on the music and I was writing the lyrics. Now, keep in mind,
everybody, I'm a drummer. So this is me. I play guitar on the side a little bit, but I'm a drummer. So
if you like observe the room at that point where you're like figuring out the melody on the tracks.
Yeah.
And I'm on the table scribbling lyrics. It was very Lennon McCartney-esque.
Absolutely.
Very much so. Anyway, so it is deeply, deeply embarrassing because I was the singer. And as you'll hear, I can't sing. I cannot sing at all. And sometimes when I sing, I get a weird quality in my voice where it almost sounds like Tracy Chapman.
It was a bit Tracy Chapman-esque.
So it's an act of great vulnerability to play the song.
Absolutely. But it is the international debut. And look, rush out to all your good music stores. They're not going to have it. but you can ask for it. And they'll just probably ask you to leave the store.
Yeah. It's almost, even though it's only about a minute and a half long, I think it's probably almost too long to play in the middle of the episode. Should we give them a snippet? And if you want to hear the whole thing, listen in after the things. Outro.
It's a good idea. Okay. Yeah.
So I guess we... may as well play the song. Ladies and gentlemen, I present to you the Martin Brothers' first single. They're on to big things, these boys. Hey.
Opened up the door the other day. She was standing there back to me. Struggled to think what to say. Hey, how you doing? Where you been? What you up to? Who you see? Though I didn't really care. Yeah, yeah, yeah. trot, then we were not.
Well, just a little taster.
Look, I'm going to get in ahead of time. If only the promotional team got behind us. Because we are not, that is not going to be it.
We had all the elements except the marketing was not there.
The bloody record company. They did it again. Bloody suits. They don't know what they're talking about.
What I love best about that is with absolutely no singing ability, I committed. I committed to the song.
You did commit.
It's a lesson for the kids out there.
Yes.
Even when you don't have any ability or talent, commit.
Do you reckon if we played that and in on The Voice and you had the three judges with their seats facing away,
Who,
do you reckon any would turn around?
No.
No. I agree.
The only bit they might raise an eyebrow is that bit where we go from, we went through a drought, then we were not, and then rhyming trot with not, I reckon they've gone, hang on a minute. And I think at one point I rhyme the word one with the word one.
Yeah.
Like, I rhyme the word with itself.
Yeah, Bob Dylan, eat your heart out.
Terrible.
Anyway, that's basically, we did it because we were lonely, and that song is one of the reasons we were lonely. Like, it's...
It was a little bit self-perpetuating, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was,
absolutely.
So I guess at the end of the pod, we'll leave with that full
We'll play that. How about we? We'll stop the no end theme song.
Yeah, go
That'll be that. Our end theme song. If anyone is interested, I think Brian Tripp is the only one likely to be even vaguely interested. He might, maybe there's a mug at the end for him.
Deeply embarrassing.
Yeah.
Okay. I think we've got time for a very quick social etiquette segment.
All right.
All right. Hit the theme song.
If you've got a social problem that makes you want to run and hide, then we recommend you listen to Luke and Dawn's Etiquette Guide. Luke and Dawn's Etiquette Guide, if you want.
All right, Dawn, this is a little bit of a specific scenario, but I find myself in the situation more often than I would like. Where I'm at a friend's house, or someone's house who is not my own house.
Okay.
Let me just say, I'm at a house that's not mine.
Yes. Okay?
Go to the bathroom, and there's no lock on the door.
Yeah.
And often because I'm carrying my 100 children in tow, and I might be at a friend's house who also has children, and you've got 100 kids running up and down the hallway. And having no lock is concerning.
It is.
As a starting point.
Absolutely.
But often what I'm finding is a few occasions where not only is there no lock, but I'm sitting on the toilet, and I'm a long way from the door. So I can't even do that thing of, if anyone tries to enter, reaching out and putting my hand on the door.
Yeah. Okay, this is good. Yep.
It is. I actually think this is one of the greatest moments of vulnerability in an adult lifespan, where you are pants down on the toilet with an unlocked door, with children running all over the shop. Kids do a wee every 5 minutes.
Yeah.
In that moment, what are my options?
There's no option. There's no option.
There's nothing.
No.
Have you been in this situation?
Absolutely. Okay. Many times. Good. And look, if there's no lock on the door, you can't relax, for one. You want to get it over with quickly, but you can't because you can't relax. That's you're kind of powerless. And I think
it's a paradox, isn't it? It's a real paradox.
At some point, you just need to accept the fact that someone may walk in at any moment and you just got to put your hands out and go, we all do it. I'll do it and let me finish. But I love a door lock. And if, like, this is me, if I walk into a toilet at any place, whether the door's in reach or not, if there's no lock on the door, I'm like,
It's one of the worst things. One of the worst things.
It is the worst thing. But at least if you can put the hand out, they're not going to get a full view of you just with your pants down on the toilet.
True. Yeah. I've got a couple of strategies I've developed. Let me run them by you. So the first one, which is an absolute essential, it's a non-negotiable.
Yep.
When you're sitting on the toilet, you just need to make sure that if someone was to open it, they don't see anything. So you need to have all your bits covered up. You need to have your legs in a position for blockage. You need to make sure that things are covered. That's like a basic defensive posture. That's number one.
Okay. So like a shirt hanging down?
Shirt hanging down, leaning forward greatly.
Okay.
Let's not go into specifics.
No, I think we need to. I think this is what that event's all about.
Make sure that they're not going to cop an eyeful if they open the door. It's rule one, right?
Yeah.
Rule two, as you're going into the toilet, bit of a yell out, oh, hey, guys, I'm just going to go to the toilet quickly. So
you're making an announcement.
So people know you're in there.
Okay.
And so they're less likely to charge in.
If you go to a party, for instance, could you bring a sign saying close for cleaning? And you put it you put it out the front, and then no one's going in there. Close for cleaning.
Close for cleaning.
Yeah. That's not a bad idea.
You go to the boot of the car, get out your clothes for sale.
Yeah, clothes cleaning, go in, and you can relax a little bit, get things done a bit quicker.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
It's like, have you ever gone camping and it's mid-morning, you're going in to use the toilet, and then they've got that clothes for cleaning sign on there?
Oh, yes.
It's like, they're waiting for, all right, most people are making coffee right now. Okay. It's time to put the sign up.
They always clean in peak hour.
Oh,
it's like
ridiculous.
Between 8 and 10 in the morning.
Yeah.
They've shut up shop for a clean.
It's nuts.
It is like washing the highway during peak hour or putting the sprinkler on in the oval in the middle of a game. Like, do it between like 2 and 4 in the afternoon.
It's ridiculous. And it's always like 7 kilometers to the next toilet. So you're just kind of just walking really weirdly, like trying to act natural, but you can't. And it's the worst.
It's the same in shopping centers.
Yeah.
Whereas you're rushing there and it's closed for cleaning. It's like, the next toilet is on level 7.
You're
like,
oh, bloody hell.
Do you ever that moment where there's people in the stall or the toilet and the cleaners are trying to find a moment where they can shut it down?
Yeah.
And often they start the clean waiting for people to finish. And then if you kind of struggle your way in there and they've got someone in there so it's open still and they leave, so you're the last person in there, so it's you and the cleaner, you're like extra conscious not to make it sound like you're making a mess for them.
Yeah. It's always a little bit weird as well when the cleaner is a female.
Yes.
And you're one of the last ones in there, but she's just going about the cleaning business.
Yep.
But you're at the stall trying to act cool.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're like, you don't belong here.
Yeah. For her, it's like an everyday occurrence. But for us, it's like, I'm in the toilet and there's someone of a different gender in here.
Yeah.
Anyway, back on with the strategies.
I think anyone who has a house with no lock on the toilet should go to jail. I think that's the only solution.
Should always be a
standard.
A regulation.
They need
a
regulation. They need a code to check all the toilets. Okay. Hey, there's no lock in here, mate. How are people supposed to relax?
Balconies need a railing.
Yeah.
Electricity sockets need a cover.
Pools need a fence around the outside. And toilets need a lock. It's a basic standard for human living.
Yeah, I think we could have a period where you phase out old toilet doors, but any new door needs a lock.
Yeah, a grace period.
Yeah. Any new door needs a lock under the code.
100%.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah. Well, here's a question for you.
Mm.
If you're on the toilet,
yep.
If someone knocks on the door, what's your standard response?
Well, first of all, there is no more submissive position than being on the toilet and having... I usually yell out, oh, sorry, I'm in here.
That's still a reenactment. This is my standard response. Okay, so
gotta be the person coming in.
Yeah. Nearly done.
Your voice is way too high.
Yeah, I know. Well, it depends what stage I'm at. But I'll say anything like that, or I'll go, yep.
Yeah.
It's tough.
I wonder what a person with confidence would say. Would they be like, hang on, mate?
Yeah. Cool your jets, buddy.
Cool your jets, buddy. All right, well, I think that wraps that up. So I guess we're in the home stretch here.
Mm-hmm.
As always, we need to announce a best on ground, worst on ground. I think, again, best on ground is the single hay.
Yes.
Worst on ground, the single hay.
Yeah,
I think that's probably true. It's happened again.
Is there anything else that is in contention?
Oh, I actually reckon the clothes for cleaning sign is pretty good.
I like that.
That's a best on ground nominee.
Yep. All right. We'll go to the single hay just to try and push a few more units.
Good.
Single hay, get out there. All best record stores.
Yeah.
Ask for it. It's by the Martin Brothers.
When you imagine the single in the CD shop, so we now it might be Brashers, it might be Sanity, whatever the CD
Absolutely.
Shop
Fossies.
Is.
Fossies. Yep.
What is on the cover?
I'm going to say... I think it's one of those classic just pictures of your face.
Just close-up.
Close-up, picture of your face, looking sad because...
Sad or contemplative?
No, sad.
Sad.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep.
Just how it was for many years growing up because he didn't receive any attention from the ladies, and just summing that whole period up.
I've got my head. I've got a dashboard of a car.
Mm.
Good. With a steering wheel.
Yep.
You can see my arms as the lead vocalist.
Yep.
My arms on the wheel. Revision mirror. In the revision mirror.
Yeah, good.
Is the girl
lovely
in the background who the song is about.
Yeah, that is good. Okay, done. That's it. And that'll shift even more units. That's how good that is. Fantastic.
Awesome. All righty. Well, thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to do the Biggest Tolerator quiz.
Yep, check the socials. So check Facebook or check Instagram. We'll have a link there for you to go and do the quiz.
Yeah.
And I think we've had, look, not that many, maybe like 15, 16 people doing the quiz so far.
Mm-hmm.
Get into it. You could score yourself a mug. And this is what's going to happen. You give us our details. We're going to have two mugs to give away. Haven't discussed this with Luke at all.
Yep.
One is for the winner.
Mm-hmm.
The second is a wild card.
Ooh.
Someone else.
Are you making this up on the spot?
Absolutely. I'm making it. I'm just trying to get some more people to do the quiz. It's like a second chance draw.
Mm.
So if you do the quiz at all, regardless of your result, you go into a chance to win a mug
A
second mug.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That is
a coveted What's That About mug.
Yes. Yeah, no, you're good.
Mm.
Yeah, very, very good.
Mm.
And I just want to emphasize yet again that the mug will be delivered promptly.
Absolutely.
And unlike Brian, it's round up to 2 years trippy.
Yeah.
Mr. Roundup himself.
Yeah, Mr. Roundup. He's now called Mr. Brian Roundup.
It'll be delivered very promptly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll get into it.
Nah, do it. So, yeah, check Facebook is probably the best. Instagram doesn't like links. I don't know why.
Can you do it in the image description?
You can, but you can't click on it. You can't tap on it. Yeah, they just don't like links. I don't know why. So I'll do it, and you can figure it out. I'll do it on Instagram, but go Facebook. Click on the link, do it quickly, or if you're really lazy, email whatsthatabout@outlook.com and I'll send you the link personally. And if you're really, really desperate, I'll even do it for you. So that's how much we want numbers coming up to the 100th episode.
Perfect. Yeah, also, if you know why modern freezers don't suction shut, send us an email.
Yeah.
All righty. Thank you very much for listening yet again, and we will catch you next time.
All right. Love you. Bye.
Bye. Opened up the door the other day. She was standing there back to me. Struggled to think what to say. Hey, how you doing? Where you been? What you up to? Who you see? Although I didn't really care. To me you were the lot. I don't know what I did, but all of a sudden we went through a drought. Then we were not. Struggle to think what to say. What to say. To me you are the one, the one and only one. When we were together, to me you were the light. Don't know what happened, all of a sudden we went through a trot. Then we were not.